Well, all right, again, welcome back to the Gutowski Files, starring Stephen Gutowski. Stephen is the founder, editor-in-chief, lead writer, CEO, over at thereload.com, as you well know. For new viewers and listeners, Stephen does have his own site. It is called The Reload. Go check that out when you get a chance and consider getting a membership. He relies on his membership dues to fund his important work. Now with his hair being grown out, this is jealousy talking. He needs a lot more hair product, folks, a lot more
expensive to maintain.
It takes a lot of money. So Stephen, how are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty well. How about you? How are you doing?
Not too bad at all. I had a day. Stephen's been running around all day doing reporter stuff, and I've been doing podcast stuff, and I was in the middle of a really interesting and sensitive interview when my SD card told me that it was full, even though it wasn't. And then it refused to work. And yeah, that's how my day's been going, but no complaints. I love my job. Fun. So over at The Reload, I think it came out yesterday or the day before. Stephen and Jake Fogelman talk in depth about the NRA case, but can you just touch on that real quick, kind of what's going on at the NRA, and we can send folks over to The Reload to get the rest of it.
Yeah. We did a whole podcast episode on sort of the details of the verdict, which came in on Friday at like 6 o'clock.
Did I call that or did I call that?
That's Jerry's for you, man. They clearly did not want to come back on Monday. So they were like, we're going to finish this up now and get out of here. Yeah. So, that was, I think, yeah, we had talked about that and predicted that might happen. I, you know, not surprised, but I think bottom line, the big ticket items were all bad for the NRA and its former leadership, current and former leadership. The jury found that the NRA did not properly safeguard its charitable assets as an organization, and that Wayne LaPierre, the longtime head of the NRA, who was actually still CEO and executive vice president through about halfway through this case, he announced his resignation right before it started, but didn't go into effect about halfway through. Right. He was found to have done $5.4 million worth of harm to the organization by diverting funds towards his personal expenses for things like private flights for his family and himself. Obviously there's a whole world of other big expenses, private helicopter flights for NASCAR races, mm-hmm. Was one of the things that came out during the trial. And then of course suits and luxury hotels and vacations. There's a lot of things wrapped up into this case. Not all of those, by the way, made it to the final verdict. Like for instance, you probably heard a lot about yacht trips that he took with NRA vendor, David McKenzie. Mm-hmm. So he was David McKenzie's companies did work for the NRA to the tune of like hundreds of millions of dollars over the years, in fundraising and TV production. But Wayne was also very close with him, and he owned several yachts, which Wayne took trips on over the years. That actually relationship didn't make it to the end of into the claims because he's not related to David McKenzie, and so wasn't a related party transaction. I guess the bottom line with what I mean there is like not everything you've heard over the years of these sort of corruption allegations or these ethical issues actually made it to the end of this trial. And so this trial only dealt with a specific number of them, but on the big ticket stuff like Wayne LaPierre, the former treasurer, Woody Phillips is also found to have done $2 million worth of damages to the organization. And so those were kind of the big things. The NRA didn't properly administrate its charitable funds under the law, and former members of leadership are now liable for millions of dollars in repayments actually to the NRA. So, LaPierre will have to pay the NRA most likely. We haven't gotten to the sentencing sort of phase of this yet. And I'll also get to why that matters later on, but most likely he's going to be forced to repay the NRA for this millions of dollars that he used for personal expenses.
Do we ever find out if he had to file a financial disclosure? Has anyone looked into that? Because I would love to know like what his financial picture looks like and if he's actually able to repay these millions of dollars and like, will he have anything left over at the end of it?
That's a great question. We don't have anything like what his current net worth is or what liquid assets he has access to. So we don't know whether he has the sort of money to be able to repay this big liability that he's. So the jury here is the verdict is about fact finding. They're just coming up with, you know, determining whether these things happen that the AG accused the NRA and its leadership of doing, and if they happened, how much damage was done to the organization as a result. And so they're not handing down, like, this verdict doesn't actually determine what Wayne is going to potentially have to pay back, if he's going to have to pay back anything. I mean, it's very likely that the judge is going to agree, I think, with the jury on that front, but technically the judge is the one who will enter the sort of sentencing aspect of this civil case. I mean, this is a civil case, so this is not, these aren't criminal charges. Nobody's going to jail over any of this stuff, at least not from this prosecution. In theory, there could be criminal charges after the fact. I think speaking with some experts, it doesn't usually happen in these cases. Cause you know, if you think about it, like, well, if Wayne took $5.5 million of excess benefits over the years, you know, basically used NRA money to pay for personal expenses, the IRS would presumably, and state officials for tax purposes, would then want that counted as his income, which means right. He has been filing false, perhaps filing false in income tax forms for years. And that would potentially have criminal consequences, but we haven't actually heard of any serious inquiry on that end. And I, from what I've heard, I wouldn't expect it to happen, that right. This might be kind of one of those situations where they're like, well, the civil punishment is enough here. And of course the criminal, prosecution would have a higher bar of proof as well. So it'd be harder to actually, convict him of these things in a criminal case. So that might play a role too, but yeah.
Yeah, this sort of thing is so foreign to me. I came from, you know, almost 3 decades in the public sector, where if I bought a pencil eraser with my government credit card, I immediately had to fill out a form in triplicate and like bring it to my boss and make sure, you know what I mean? The idea that, you know, I understand over time, you know, you lose track of things, but 5 million, if that is the actual real final number, that's a lot of money. And like I said last week, man, that's a lot of Eddie Eagle programs. That's a lot of law enforcement, you know, firearms instructor classes. That's a lot of stuff that could have been done. A lot of legislative work that could have been done that could not be done because we're busy flying our wife, you know, over the little people to a NASCAR race. That's just my 2 cents. So
yeah, it's interesting too, because the jury, I mean, some of this stuff we get into it more in depth on the Reload podcast, but you know, it's sort of the big ticket items were very clearly negative for the NRA and LaPierre. And the other members of leadership who were on trial here. But then there were some mixed bag aspects towards the tail end of these charges. So the sort of, the jury also found the NRA didn't do enough to protect whistleblowers. So that was another negative thing for the NRA. So it didn't safeguard its charitable assets, and it didn't protect whistleblowers who complained about issues inside the NRA, right? In fact, right. For eight different whistleblowers were at issue, and the jury said NRA didn't protect any of them. And that included people like the former treasurer, Craig Spray, or former board members like Phil Journey and Rocky Marshall, and a bunch of former board members. But, so it, you know, it's very negative on those big ticket stuff, but, some of the other stuff that it wasn't a total win for the Attorney General either, I would say. Big ticket items, wins for the AG, losses for the NRA, but there are things like the related party transactions, some of these payments that the NRA had made to, board members, for instance, over the years for different, things like, lobbying efforts or speeches, running events, things like that, they found that they weren't properly approved ahead of time, but retroactively were approved and didn't have an issue with most of them. Two of them, there was a hair and makeup for Wayne LaPierre's wife was one that the jury found was not appropriately approved. And then speaking fees for one of the NRA board members and former president David Keene was another one. And then, but the rest of them, they said, were okay. Woody Phillips had a post-employment contract where he was paid $30,000 a month for consulting, where it wasn't clear whether he actually ever did anything for that. But they found that that is a similar thing where they found it was not appropriate, but also didn't award any harm to the NRA. Like it didn't, the jury found it didn't cause any monetary damage, this contract, maybe because it was canceled very early on. Wayne was, the AG wanted, I think, closer to $11 million in damages from Wayne LaPierre by the end of the case. And the jury seemed to have cut that in half for some reason. It's not clear why. Or the top lawyer, John Fraser, they found that he made material false statements on government documents, but then they didn't find cause for removing him like they did with LaPierre and Woody Phillips. So it's some of the stuff towards, it wasn't a total down the line. They just checked yes on everything. Right. So they definitely put thought into each one of these charges, it seems. And they came out towards the end in a more of a mixed bag way. I think that, but again, the big ticket stuff that really matters for consequences.
Yeah.
That's where I think everyone's going to focus and where the most important stuff is going to happen. So because of this, you might see a court appointed overseer at the NRA, or might multiple, actually. The AG wants two of them for different purposes, for spending, you know, how they spend their money and then how the organization's bylaws are structured. And then obviously she wants Wayne to be banned from working for nonprofits and to have to pay back all that money that he made in damages. Now he did already pay back about $1 million, the jury found. So he's more on the hook for like $4.5 million, something right. like that.
You had mentioned sentencing. Do we know, we have a date for sentencing, and what do we anticipate might happen when that comes down the road?
Yeah, this is the other major thing that I haven't really seen any coverage of outside of the Reload. And it's actually very significant for the 2024 election because the judge said after the verdict came in that now they're going to move to the next phase of this trial, which is going to be another multi-week trial, basically, but it's just in front of the judge. There won't be a jury at that point, and it'll just be about what repercussions are appropriate. And so the judge will decide all of that. And he said during verdict, after the verdict came down, that the next available time for a multi-week trial in his schedule is not until July. And so if you think through the election, that means that for the next, five months here, at least, the NRA is going to be in this sort of limbo state where the current leadership came out after the verdict was handed down and they said it was good for them. I don't know how you could get to that conclusion.
Good for the long term of the NRA. I mean, that's true, I guess, right?
They just said that they were vindicated, even though
right.
Well, they all did. They weren't.
I'm sure that's what always happens. Like, but we came out of this stronger than ever, and the evidence clearly showed. And meanwhile, no, it didn't.
Right. But I think the big takeaway from that statement, if you go and read it, is that they're not going to change course in any way. There weren't any resignations, no firings, nothing like that is happening at the NRA. Now, obviously, Wayne LaPierre already resigned, so he's not there anymore. But it's still run by a lot of people who were longtime allies of Wayne LaPierre. Andrew Rolandum is the current executive vice president. He was longtime spokesperson, sort of right-hand man for Wayne. Charles Cotton is the current president, who they did some internal maneuvering to keep in the presidency longer than he was supposed to be. And he was the head of the audit committee that approved a lot of these related party transactions and expenses that the jury found were not appropriate. So, and longtime Wayne ally, of course. So the people who run the organization, it's the same group essentially, and they're not going to change. There's no resignations, no changes to leadership. And that means, I think, that they're going to likely continue to struggle to raise money, which is a big problem in the 2024 election. Because if you recall, 2016, Donald Trump had problems raising money for his presidential bid. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be the same this time around too, for a lot of the same reasons. Cause if you've been following the news, he had a huge judgment against him in a similar trial in New York, a civil case with the same AG who, that locks up like half $1 billion. If I'm remembering, there's a lot of money basically. Right. And he's just having some of this, a lot of the same problems where his legal fees are eating up most of his, the money that's coming in, a lot of the money that gets donated to the Trump campaign or to different Republican entities is largely going to spend on his legal fees, just like the NRA right now. And so he's going to be cash strapped going into this election, and the NRA is not, is also going to be cash strapped, unlike 2016, where they were able to spend $50 million.
Right.
This time around, as of now, as of the latest filings, the NRA has about $11 million in its super PAC and PAC, which is like its political entities that it can use to spend money in the election. And so they're going to need to raise a lot of money between now and the end of the year, you know, in November when the election happens. And the this trial is, they're still going to be stuck in limbo. They're still between this verdict, which was, which came in largely against them in all the biggest questions, and the actual sentencing where they might be forced to reform by the courts. You know, they might be, one of the things that can happen with that monitor is they can get rid of all the current leadership. And in fact, this is something that a lot of sort of critics, internal critics or former board members, people like that who want to see the NRA reformed are counting on. They're hoping that a monitor comes in and rolls over the leadership to people who are, weren't involved in the corruption aspects of what happened. But the problem is that's not going to happen till the end of the summer. And nobody's going to, even if you wanted to reform, let's say they all, current leadership resigned tomorrow, and reformers got control of the organization from inside, you're going to be really hard pressed to find somebody of really significant value from outside the organization to come in and take over with this verdict hanging over the organization for the next 5 months. They're going to want to wait until after that happens at the very least to see what the court does. Right. I mean, it's going to be hard to get somebody with a lot of experience or knowledge or talent to come in and run the organization tomorrow if they could be removed in a couple months by a court. Right. So
absolutely. I was going to say, folks, if you want more on this, if you go over to the Reload, and you can get their podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere you want. I listened to the whole thing. It was really informative, and Stephen and Jake Fogelman go into great detail. They talk about other things like the future of the NRA, what this might mean, a lot of good info, but I wanted to get to our next story. So also on the podcast, you had an attorney from California, Anna, it's either Barvier or Bavir Boone. I'm sure I butchered that name as well. Anyway,
I did too.
When I talked about the case, the advertising case in California, where California set up this new law, basically stating you can't advertise guns to minors or whatever.
And in a way that would appeal to minors.
Right. So obviously pretty vague. She was on the podcast. Just give us an idea of what you guys talked about.
Yeah. Well, she, one of the big reasons that that case is interesting. Now she had won at the panel level, the three judge panel level, the Ninth Circuit, right. Mm-hmm. In this case, because this was the case where youth shooting sports leagues had to shut down for a while over this law, because of the really broad, vague implications of it. And then they went back, California went back and amended it, but that didn't actually solve all the issues according to the plaintiffs in this lawsuit. And so they went along and they eventually won on First Amendment grounds, because it's basically a speech regulation, even though it has to do obviously very specifically with firearms. But the thing that makes it really interesting, because the ruling came down last September, she Anna won her case. But then of course the state appealed to what's called an en banc hearing or an en banc review of the case by a full panel of the Ninth Circuit, which would be like 15 judges out of the 29, I believe it is, that are on the Ninth Circuit. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing that happened is the Ninth Circuit didn't accept that actually nobody from the Ninth Circuit, none of the judges, voted in favor of rehearing this case en banc. And which means basically that, the California has very little chance of winning this case on the merits. And it's especially interesting because oftentimes with gun cases, if a gun rights plaintiff in California or anywhere in the Ninth Circuit wins at the panel level, the three judge panel level, in the past, between Heller and now, almost always, if the government requested an en banc panel on a gun case, they would get it, and the en banc panel would overturn the lower court and side with the government on its gun restrictions. And so this is particularly interesting because it could mean there's a shift coming in the Ninth Circuit in how it handles gun cases. Now, the one big caveat to that is that this was not a Second Amendment case. This was a First Amendment case, technically.
Right.
And so that might play a role. They did, the Ninth Circuit did take up an en banc review request on another Second Amendment case. But also, it's sort of like, we've talked about the Supreme Court before, where like, they can't take every Second Amendment case. They can't, because they can only take so many cases per year. And it's sort of the same thing with the Ninth Circuit and en banc reviews. With how many cases are coming up through the system post-Bruin, they might have to start picking and choosing which ones they actually want to take en banc and overturn. So that we'll have to see how it plays out, but it's an interesting procedural move that most people might not have heard of, but could have a really big impact in places like California on how successful these legal challenges are.
Absolutely. Folks, go check out, I can't talk today. Go check out the Reload podcast. Again, you can get it by going to thereload.com. You can get it by going to your podcast app, whatever you use, Apple, Spotify. And you can also get it on YouTube. So check it out on YouTube. And I think you guys do shorter clips over there as well on YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly.
Yeah. If you're on your break and you want to get a little knowledge, check it out. Thereload.com. That is our time. Stephen, once again, as always, thank you for coming on and being the knowledgeable guest. It makes my job easy. I could just be a big dumb guy here asking you questions and you take over the rest of it. So I appreciate that aspect of it.
Well, if you're dumb, you're hiding it pretty well because you ask some really good questions.
I do my best. All right, folks, do me a favor if you would. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, go leave us a 5-star review and say a couple of words. Tell me what you'd like to see different, change what you do like the way it is now, whatever it might be. Let me know. And if you can spell it correctly, include the name Gutowski. We've had a lot of success in the past that people get, they take that challenge and they go over there and leave the name Gutowski. And 50% of the
cheating.
Time it is spelled correctly.
I couldn't spell it through second or third grade. I remember specifically one class where we go through the line, and it was to help you learn spelling, and you were supposed to spell your own name.
Right.
And my name is freaking Stephen Gutowski Stephen with a PH.
Right.
First of all,
make it more difficult.
And then Gutowski, this rare, though not as rare as you might think, Polish name. Once I got slightly internet famous or notoriety on the internet, I started to realize how common this name actually is. I think if you think you have a rare name, go look around the internet for other people, because I will still get people who reach out and they're like, oh, are you the guitar, are you related to this person from Minnesota or something? It's like, nope.
I'm just blessed.
You wouldn't think it, but it's a common name. It's a much more common.
I've been around a ton of people with unusual names. I have a friend named Dragilowitz. I got a friend named Pawlowski. I got a friend named Ungieski. So
there's even more famous Gutowskis out there than me. Not that that's a high bar to meet, but there's a Eva Gutowski who's like a big YouTuber. It's always a surprising thing.
I had it pretty easy in the spelling department. My last name is literally a compound word. Will ever smell like it sounds. Although people still call me Mike Wilbur with some frequency, but whatever. I don't mind. Just don't call me late for dinner. All right, folks, that is a time for this week. Stephen, as always, you have the last word.
Absolutely.